Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, Missouri Township Board of Supervisors, new community center planning update. Call to order. I will ask everyone to please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Nagle, will you do the roll call?
Mr. Moyer, here. Mr. Weir, here. Ms. Ford, here. Ms. Frank, here.
Mr. Foley, here. I am here. And for the purpose of providing clear and accurate minutes, all board members to ensure that they're speaking into the microphones, we've had some requests for that to be more clear. At this point, I'm going to turn the presentation over to our Director of Parks and Recreation, Matt Mandia.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board members, and I also want to thank each and every one of you for being here this evening, taking time out of your busy summer schedule to spend a little time with us here this evening to hear an update on planning and a lot of hard work that's occurred over the last 2 years in planning a new community recreation center right here in Derry Township. I do recognize a lot of folks in the audience, but for those that I don't know, my name is Matt Mandia, the Director of Parks and Recreation, and it's an absolute pleasure to be here with you this evening. A brief side note, our community treasure, known to some as Cocoa Avenue Plaza, and to others, the Hershey Recreation Center, will be 54 years old this year. The township acquired the facility from the Hershey Chocolate Company in 1979, and I've had the absolute honor to be the director of this community treasure for nearly 24 years out of the 38 years the township has owned and operated our facility. As such, I've seen firsthand the amazing recreational services this facility has offered and the amazing people that have offered them. More recently, I've also experienced the challenges of operating an age facility and experiencing some of the challenges of seeing our community's recreational needs expand while our facility has remained constant. The planning process we've embarked upon has been and will continue to be extremely rewarding for me, knowing that we are collectively planning and charting the way for our community recreation to serve the residents of our community for the next 50 years and beyond. I do want to stress at the outset of our presentation that we're still working on the conceptual phase of this process. The conceptual step in this process is the very early stages. With that said, we've done a lot of work, but we are still in the initial stages of the process. Some of the programming elements that you'll be seeing this evening are still being evaluated, and certainly the financing piece of the equation is still being evaluated aggressively as well. With all that said, we collectively felt that this was a good time to get back together with the community and give you an update on where we are in the process this evening. Our goal this evening is really twofold. First, to provide background and a status update of the planning process to date and how we've arrived at this point in the conceptual planning phase for the facility. And secondly, provide the community with yet another opportunity to be further engaged in this planning process. So let me explain the sequence of how we'd like to proceed this evening. I do want to remind the group that we do have a public board supervisors meeting scheduled for 7 p.m. this evening. We did get off a little bit of a late start, but I think we're in pretty good shape to proceed expeditiously. We would like to complete our entire presentation, and we will provide some time for board comment, and we want to make sure that we provide ample time for public comment, question and answers for you to be engaged in this process. At that point, we'll be asking public if you do have questions or want public comment, that you'll be coming up to this microphone here. One other item, housekeeping, this presentation is being filmed and recorded. both of which will be on the township's website for you to refer to at a future date. And please, if there's anyone that you know is not able to make it here this evening, please let them know that that resource will be available on the township's website as well. So with that, I'd like to begin by changing slides. There we go. I want to introduce our presenters this evening. First, on your far left is Jim Bogret from Kimmel Bogret Architecture and Site. Jim has been our consultant guiding us through the conceptual phase of our planning process to date. Jim will provide an up-to-date review of the project's conceptual status. Jim, thanks so much. I know you came from Philadelphia, Conshohocken, outside of Philadelphia today, so we appreciate you getting here this evening. Greg Crucis introduced Greg from Capital Construction Management. We'll share some insights on his work evaluating various construction comparisons for the project. And on your far right, introduced Lou Verdelli from RBC Capital Markets, who will discuss some potential strategies of how a project such as this may be funded. Can everyone see the screen? Okay. So the presentation outline, provide a brief history of our current facility, review some of the challenges of our current 54-year-old facility, also provide a snapshot of the planning process to date, review the current program and conceptual design by Jim. Greg will review the construction comparisons, and Lou will do the funding strategies. As everyone fully is aware, we have a rich history in terms of leisure and recreation in our local community, starting way back in 1932 at the community center uptown, and then later in 1963, the construction of our current facility on 605 Cocoa Avenue, and obviously still operating out of that current facility in 2017. The facility was dedicated in memory of Milton S. Hershey on October 20th, 1963. Just a little trivia, it was intended to be dedicated on his birthday on September 13th, but they ran into some mechanical issues, and the opening and dedication was delayed until October 20th. The facility began as a state-of-the-art structure with very innovative designs, including a retractable dome, which is still, quote-unquote, somewhat operable, and I'll refer to that in just a little bit. The facility was sold for $1 to the township on September 13, 1979. The township has owned and operated the facility since that time, and has served as a hub of community recreation. It continues to serve our community recreation center today, but is significantly limited, with no additional programming space added in 54 years, and certainly the demands for recreation in the community have changed. It is the home of the Hershey High swim team. It hosts of community events and a multitude of ongoing aquatics and recreational programming throughout the year. It's obviously the site of our summer outdoor community recreation pool. It's situated adjacent to the Derrick Township School District campus. And over the past 10, 12 years, it's really shown quite clearly the need for a more robust after-school and teen program in the afternoons, which we are continually trying to improve upon in our current facility, but can do much better. Both program and facility demands have far exceeded the current facility's ability to accommodate those demands, and our recreation, social, cultural, and aquatic needs cannot be fully met due to the lack of current indoor programming and aquatic space availability. Once again, the facility turns 54 years old this year and is showing its age in many areas of its infrastructure. So, one of the areas, three areas that I really want to share this evening, some of the challenges that we run into really on a daily basis. And one is the limited indoor program space that we encounter on an ongoing basis at the Recreation Center. You can see this is our front desk here with our staff. We have telephones ringing. Most times we have folks either buying memberships or registering for programs at that desk. Most of the time kids running around in the lobby. 2 years ago, we purchased this partition here. And as a matter of fact, our Parks and Rec Advisory Board meets in this area. Our stakeholders committee that was formed for this project meets in this area. You can tell that that's not the most conducive situation. There's no barrier for sound. Another note is that this area represents about 615 square feet. In comparison to this room that we're in, it's about 1,800 square feet. So that is one of two main programming areas in our parent recreation center, and it's about one-third of the size of this room, just for scale. Our other indoor programming area is the small gymnasium on the upper level of the recreation center. That area is one-quarter of the size of a full-size gymnasium. And that is our large programming area. That area is transformed into young children's programming or martial arts programming, even hosts our after-graduation party for Hershey High graduates each year at the recreation center. So that space is transformed into a lot of useful uses, but once again, it is one quarter of the size of the gymnasium. The other area that we have significant challenges is our limited pool space. In addition to the age of both of the pools, the pool space over the 38 years that the township has operated facility has become increasingly more difficult. The indoor pool is six lanes. It's operated 9 months of the year as our sole indoor aquatics facility, and 3 months of the year serves as our second outdoor facility. During the 9 months, this body of water is programmed full from 5:30 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. We reached a point many years ago that we would need to eliminate existing programs in order to add other programs. And we can't expand existing programs because there just isn't enough pool availability. The other issue is during peak use for practices, large programs, the pool is unavailable to the public, often during peak programming times, which is a lot of time after school, early evenings, where folks might want to come for swim lessons, last swimming after work, those types of activities where the pool just isn't available at that time, once again, due to the lack of water surface area. Another area that I want to touch on is accessibility challenges. And let me just go back once more. In terms of accessibility issues with our swimming pools, I want to be clear that we do and have always met all federal EPA regulations. I want to make that clear. But newer designs and newer techniques make a much more seamless way for individuals with disabilities to enter and exit aquatic facilities and water. We certainly meet that, but you can see we have steps and we also have a battery-operated lift that individuals can use to get into the upper pool. We have a very similar lift run on battery in the lower pool as well. So some additional accessibility challenges within the facility. We have four distinct levels within the current recreation center. You have the lobby area, you have the locker room area, you have the upper pool deck area, and you have the lower pool deck area. So you can imagine the variation in levels and someone with disabilities getting in and out of that facility easily. Just very quickly, so someone comes in the lobby, they have to load, this platform comes up at the top, they load on here, they come down into the locker room area, and they change, they come out of the locker room. They go through between the locker rooms through our first aid area, come out this door here, they reload onto this platform, and they're brought up to the indoor pool deck area. During the summer, if this individual wants to traverse to the lower pool, they need to traverse all the way around the indoor pool deck. They have to navigate a small ramp to get off the dome apron, which is about 8 inches high. And then they have to go to the far western section of the upper outboard pool deck and go down a ramp and then load onto a lift similar to this on the lower deck. And then obviously to get back up to Hawaii, they need to do that in reverse. Once again, the folks that use our facilities, including Special Olympics, they're versed in using our facility, but there are much more seamless ways to accommodate these folks, which we would hope would be a very important part of our facility. Before I show you some of these pictures, and I have to go back and just credit our staff over the years. I'm proud to be able to stand here before all of you and say that we have not had any major significant mechanical shutdowns at our recreation center. I know I'm going to jinx myself. But we haven't had in place. We haven't had any major mechanical shutdowns in the 24 years that I've been here. That has nothing to do with me. So it is absolutely my staff that does all that work. We are extremely diligent year to year during the budgeting process to identify and prioritize the areas such as these that we absolutely know need addressed. We've been doing that for years and years and years, and it took me about 15 minutes to find these pictures, so there's a lot still there. Once again, I don't want this to be come across as you're not maintaining the facility, because you really are, but these are the areas that the public really doesn't get to see, and they're in the back areas, that if these areas fail, you don't have a public facility for folks to use. So we have some other plumbing and draining issues. This is our indoor domestic storage tank that needs to obviously be replaced shortly. We have other actuators for our HVAC systems that are located in the boiler room next to all the chemicals, which obviously is extremely difficult on equipment. More plumbing on your right. This is our domestic hot water burner, which has to be replaced, if not next year, the following year. You can see this is our outdoor pool circulating pumps, or piping, which actually comes out of the filter room and before it leaves the building and heads down to the lower pool. You can see newer valves, you can see old original valves, you can see some pieces of newer piping connected to older piping. So it's just a continual ongoing challenge that we have at this aging facility, and obviously there's an end game to that challenge. Some more, let's say serious, but more concerning structural issues that we have. This is some significant spalling of concrete in our filter room ceiling. There's fairly large chunks of concrete falling out of the ceiling. There's exposed rebar. These are the pans that are underneath the drains around the circular part of the dome. You see the grates on the upper part of the dome there. On sunny days, you stand in the filter room, you can actually see daylight out through these areas, so they're very porous. On your right is the inside wall, standing about 12-foot sector, 12-foot deep area of the pool on the other side of this wall. This is in the filter room. You can see some calcification, you can see some leaching of chemicals coming through, which is obviously a symptom of some future issues as well. And our beloved dome. I have this weird thing with the dome. It's just been such an amazing structure for so many years. But it's sad when you open the doors and you look at some of the hydraulics. This is one of four or six motors that actually drive the dome. I'm sad to say this evening that this is the first year that we were not able to completely open the dome, which drives me nuts coming down Buckle Avenue because I want everything to be kind of exact. But you'll notice the western side is not as closed as the eastern side, or open, as the eastern side. We tried everything over the years. We've had pickup trucks and chains. We wedged things under the wheels to try to get traction so that we can move it. Despite all of our efforts this year, we were going to try. We weren't able to get it completely open, and hopefully we're going to get it closed for think it was important for you to see that. This is something that we deal with on a daily basis, and we take great pride in making sure that the facility is available for our community, but we've gotten to a point, actually 2010-11, where we really start talking about the need and really going to start planning for the future. So in October of 2014, the board authorized us to get together a stakeholders committee involving a lot of community groups, including Derry Township School District, the Boulder Senior Center, our swimming community, the Hershey Medical Center, the Hershey School of Citizens at Large. And we did just that. And we really assembled an amazing group of individuals representing many organizations within our community that not only we have existing amazing relationships with, but also as we discussed and talked and brainstormed the potential for a lot of future and partnerships in the facility. For instance, at Derry Township School District, they're a natural partner. Obviously, the facility is located on their campus. We have an amazing relationship with the district right now. It have been for years in a mutual use of facilities. And with any given day after school, you come to the recreation center. Our recreation center is full of students who walk over from school each and every day. So we're dealing with the same kids. The Hershey High School swim team uses our facility as their home pool. We utilize school district facilities for our before and after school child care programs as well as their summer day camp programs. So we have an amazing relationship. And it's just a natural fit and a natural partner that we continue to work on this project together. Our Boulder Senior Center, just another amazing partner over the past couple of years in working together. Nothing says a true community recreation center like having your senior population as part of that. The potential for intergenerational programming, walking, swimming, low-impact exercise, socialization and access to many health and wellness opportunities. We're also looking at the potential of incorporating the people mover service into a very small area in our facility to really try to bring everything under one umbrella to make it a true community center. And of course, our aquatics community, yet another natural partner. We have been their home for many, many years, but really looking at a holistic view, not just competitive swimming, but all of the aquatics within the community. We brainstorm the current, future, projected usage, including recreational swimming, non-competitive exercise lap swimming, diving, synchronized swimming, Special Olympics, competitive swimming, learn-to-swim lessons, lifeguard training, water instruction, water aerobics, water zumba, yoga, and Pilates, scuba, snorkeling classes, kayak, canoe classes, water volleyball, water polo, and the list just goes on and on and on. The potential for expanded programming is immense, and we just can't accommodate it in our current water surface area. We also have had several other extremely valued, important community partners, including Penn State Hershey Medical Center, the Mill Hershey School, and many citizens at large that have all given up their time, experience, and knowledge throughout the process. And we look forward to continuing our current partnerships as well as future partnerships with those organizations. So our stakeholders group met for several months and really came up with a roadmap of how we wanted to proceed in this process. And we had some extremely talented people in the room, and we still do. We got to a point and approached the board, and they agreed that it was time to bring in consulting help in terms of really starting to form a feasibility study to look at this project in a more holistic view. So in 2015, the township engaged Ballard King Associates to do phase one feasibility study, which included a market analysis, which determined that our community would be able to support a community center such as this. They evaluated demographics, primary and secondary service areas, household incomes, recreation spending potential indexes, and a whole host of other data that they put into their analysis to come up with that conclusion. We also had two very intriguing listening sessions at the recreation center. They were held back in November of 2015. And we had a lot of input. We had boards that we placed at the front of the lobby, and the community was able to write on post-it notes needs, suggestions, wants, and areas that they felt were imperative to include within a new community center. So I'm not going to go through all these, but this was the first Wednesday, November 5th, 2015. The boards were labeled aquatics, multi-purpose programming space, running and walking, seniors, child care, gymnasium, and all those boards were at the front of the room. And a few of the boards we had to take post-its off because it wasn't enough room. So the suggestions and the ideas that just kept coming from this were tremendous. And on the 19th of November, very similar type of test with some differing ideas as well. And so Ken Ballard was able to put all this into his analysis, including the market analysis, taking into account all the public input that we received from the forums, and created a preliminary program for the facility. And they were basically divided into very similar to what the boards that we had up in the front of the lobby, aquatics, active use, which included the gymnasiums, the fitness components, running track, senior community space, passive use spaces, and the list of those that are needed there. So Ken Ballard, once again, in very preliminary fashion, gathering all that information from the community, came up with a square footage of about 105,000 square feet, which was a fairly large building. Through the continuing work of our stakeholders group and the leadership of Kimball Obrecht and Jim, we continued to meet after we received this report, and I believe the program that Jim is going to be presenting tonight is about 86,000 square feet. So we knocked about a quarter off of what the original program was in terms of trying to most effectively and efficiently put all of the components that we felt the community was asking for, but make it as efficient a design as possible. And Jim, once again, in his leadership, was tremendous in that process. And once again, I do stress, we are still at the very beginning of this. Some of the program elements we're still talking about. So what you're going to see this evening isn't necessarily what the final product's going to be. But once again, I felt this is the time to let you know and show you the work that we've done. So you'll all be happy, this is my last slide. In 2016, once again, we engaged Jim and his team from Kimball Bogret, and he began to work on that conceptual design for us. More recently, at the last public Board of Supervisors meeting on June 13th, the board authorized Ballard King Associates to conduct an operations analysis. So this operations analysis looks at various options and combinations of program elements to identify both operational revenue and expenditure projections for the current program and a couple options off of the current program. This report is anticipated to be completed by the end of July or beginning of August. Once that report is completed, the program elements will need to be decided. And at that point, the conceptual phase will be concluded. And I'm sure there's going to be additional public forums such as this that we can take another peek at where we are at that time. So with that, I will turn it over to Jim. And Jim, if you'd be so kind to share where we currently are on the concept.
Matt, well, Jim's coming up. Just an invitation to the people who are standing in the hall and on the sides. There's plenty of seats up here, so feel free to move in so you can see the screens better.
Okay, good evening. As Matt had mentioned, the what we were charged with was to really take the baton from Ken Ballard and Ballard King and take everything that was good out of that process and review it and challenge it and scrub it a little bit more and really talk about it and have the opportunity to look through it through a lens from other facilities that we have designed for other communities and any recommendations while also being open to a lot of conversation with the stakeholders. So the first thing that we did, when you hear this word program, and we do have a lot of, I don't expect you to read any of this, but the purpose of this is, I just wanted to point out that when we first began this, again, we, in a very similar organizational structure that Ken did, we also broke our program down to the same components of aquatics and seniors and passive and active users as well, so that anyone who could take our document could really look at Ken's document and read one and read both and understand that they come from the same crowd. And as we went through this, we kept adding a few more columns because what we wanted to do was to track what we originally thought, what $10 had originally thought, and then the kind of program that we thought we wanted to have after some initial stakeholder meetings. And then subsequent stakeholder meetings, we were challenging our own selves here and looking at, do we really need that? Is that really what we want? Is this really what we mean? And added yet another column so everyone can track the changes and as we issue each subsequent program. So we did it, and I'll just go through this and just and what we did as well, and started adding a little bit more information about not only the adjacencies of, like, say, the gymnasium, what's critical about where that gymnasium is located in the building, in this case it's the lobby, but give a little bit of a blurb description here about what is it about the gymnasium that's special that makes it unique that we should be mindful of when we begin to talk and design this ultimately. So this is really a story about the building and it's intended to be able to be read through in a narrative type fashion so that when you read it, you have a sense of the building. So it's a number of pages, just like Ken's. Here's the passive areas. The yellow actually means something that we got to the very end. We wanted to highlight certain specific sections where we were able to find efficiencies that Matt mentioned. During the design process, we were able to find some ways to boil out some area that we didn't think was possible when we programmed it, but when we started designing, we were able to realize it, which is good. And then, of course, the outdoor area. So when we did this narrative, we ended up with just under 100,000, 97,407 square feet. And that's obviously compared to the 105 that Ken did. So already, we're in the right direction, while still not sacrificing the program that Ken said is absolute and essential. So from here, I have a summary here of really the whole breakdown in more of a table form of the whole building. You can see that same 97,000. So only at this point were we really able to sort of, okay, everyone's in agreement, this is the program, this is about the size that we need, this is where we should go, okay, now time to put pen to paper and get into some fun things, which is the design, right? So what we did in order to find a design directive for the building, but a way to organize the building, we actually looked at the formation of the town of Hershey. And found this area in 1937, and it's actually pretty interesting. But here's Chocolate Avenue, here's 322, and I think I have another slide here that sort of outlines some of these sort of axial relationships. And from what we know is these crossroads create places of interchange, obviously, but places in need. So we took these ideas, ultimately, and patterned our building after it. So when you look at the town and how other things sort of sprout around these axes, it gives opportunity for things to sort of pitch on to this, to both east, west, and north, south kind of roads. Of course, this is the, it wasn't here then, but that's the area that our community center was located. So what we did is, and you're looking at a satellite image underneath, but we superimposed what ultimately became the block diagram for the building. And looking at ways of entrance and Cocoa Avenue, the parking, the tennis courts, the outdoor pool here and locker rooms, and you can see how we patterned that axial movement through and in and out of the site. We also went through a fair amount of design iteration, and we just wanted to, again, not ask you to read and understand one of these diagrams, but the point is that you see that we went from here to here, and we weren't just satisfied with the first generation, and certainly where we are, we're not satisfied with. We know it's going to change, we know it's going to be better, and that's a good thing. So here's the site aerial view of the current facility. Here's our indoor and outdoor pool with the retractable dome and the outdoor pool and pool deck area, and substantial amount of parking, which obviously is something we want to maintain and work with. Obviously, everyone wants to be, you know, efficient. We don't want to create a situation for changing parking for parking's sake. We actually did look at an option very early on to say, well, what if you did, can we get a better building if we move the parking? And the answer was no. And it's a good thing because this parking works well. I think all these points of entrance and egress work out really well. So really, you know, we're looking at this entire area here as a lane of opportunity, if you will. So what we have here, obviously the brand new Cocoa Castle is something that we're not going to change. The parking lot we're not going to change. Tennis courts, it was deemed, you know, even though we had looked at different options on the site, we came back full circle to recommend that this is in fact the best place when you consider that other things have to happen on the site. We have the, what you see in orange here is the indoor community center, but outboard of the building proper that you see here, as I said, the Cocoa Castle, the War Memorial, outdoor gardens, entry, empty outdoor gardens, and what we call our outdoor greens. We think about the village green idea, the place of community, the place to have space to set up tents for festivals and activity. We try to surround our building with several of these, so along Cocoa Avenue, between the parking and the outdoor pool. And you'll notice a new element here, which doesn't exist currently, which is a service access point. And right now, everything comes through here. And everything has come through here, and this is just a big mix of trucks and people and kids and bikes and strollers. And so I think it became quite evident really, you know, soon that we needed to pull this element out away from all this, so now there's no more conflict of trucks and people and strollers and bikes and things like that. So you know, this will be the receiving area, and this will be carefully coordinated with vendors so that it doesn't impose problems for the community. Now we're getting sort of the roof off the building and looking at a plan diagram, and I have a next slide after this, we'll zoom in so I can get into this and talk a little bit about it. Some of these things you'll see are going to be familiar from the site diagram that I showed you, left the tennis courts that were up here and left the bulk of the parking. But the next level in, then you can start seeing some of the ways in and out of this building. So that service area here would be, you know, a half a level down from Cocoa Castle, you know, this area. You know, this plan falls from the top of the screen to the bottom. So all this area would be, you know, one level. This would be the next level up, and then this would be the final level up. So the building, very similarly to the way the current building steps down, our building's going to do the same thing, but obviously we'll be a better version of it and much more user-friendly in terms of accessibility. So I want to zoom in one more time and try to get this as large as we possibly could while still showing all the parts here. Just actually back up one. So the parking, I'll just back up one more. The parking we looked at the total mass of cars, and when we looked at this, we wanted to make sure that our entrance, which is right at this location, was fairly distant from the furthest car parked at this location to the furthest car parked at this location. So anyone parking would be, this would pretty much be about the midpoint. of all the parking, so everyone doesn't have to walk much further than folks here. And once that's set up, if you remember that axis, that diagram I was talking about, the idea that you come in and you have that perception, you have that point of control right here, back in the middle of the building, that, you know, this look at those crossroads. The one crossroad comes all the way through, and that would get you out to Coco Castle. And the other one is an internal crossroads, but that gets you back to more of the community function. So, you know, this purple area is designated the community multi-purpose room. But I want to take a step back to the lobby and tell you a little bit more about what happens when you arrive. So when you arrive at this location, not only do you have that control desk that I was talking about, the area that you see in light powder blue here is the senior center. And we put this on this side of the building, which is east and northeast. Currently, the Muller Center has a nice outdoor space, but it faces west, southwest. And if you're ever there in any time like today, it's pretty much you're getting blind and heated and cooked, if you will. So the outdoor garden right next to the, not only right next to the entrance, and we provide some additional parking along the front here, but there's an outdoor space that's been truly usable. It's certainly a lot more welcoming. So it has all the programmatic elements that the seniors currently benefit from, with the classrooms and kitchen, and with access to the multi-purpose room, and some additional support of some restrooms that solely for the seniors to use. To the left, when you would come in, you would see all the aquatics. So we're imagining that you would have some glass wall here, so that you would come in and you would see and look down. This is, again, the middle level, and then it steps down a third time. So, and then at the crossroads of where you come in here and here, we've developed on two levels, you can see this on a second floor plan, what we call a community living room. And we've incorporated in the community living room one of the features mentioned in the Fowler King study about in our stakeholders meetings was about the fireplace. So, we have this idea of the hearth and the fireplace and welcoming and community meeting, and provide that same kind of opportunity for if you're signed up for a class or you're waiting for a friend, that you could sit here. We're imagining this being literally like soft furniture and things like that. Certainly at this level upstairs in the wellness and wellness area, we probably have slightly different furniture, considering that you might be sweaty after a class. You know, we want to make sure we have the appropriate furniture. So the dark olive that you see here is the gymnasium, and again, you see connectivity. So this is really kind of a hub and spoke kind of idea, where this is the hub of the activities in the community. But from here, you can almost kind of get anywhere fairly quickly. So you don't traverse the building, and that's really where we found some efficiencies in the design to save on some circulation area that we thought we had to build. So what you see here is in orange on this location in the south side corner, you have the back end of the service here, but also locker rooms and lifeguard party rooms, first aid, and you'll see it's a lot of these small little diagrams here, but these are a lot of little family, personal changing rooms, if you will. So we found and we've seen that the big, you know, YMCA style of yesteryear, the locker rooms, where everybody's, you know, one size, one big room for everybody, isn't really the mindset here. We're looking at, you know, privacy and the ability for folks to feel like almost like they're at home and have the ability to change it, go swimming, come right out. So near the end here, near Coco Castle, we have a child watch area and a play area, which, if you can imagine, this is sort of like a children's-sized gymnasium. We were actually able to add this during design. We found the square footage, so even though that savings of square footage is still there, even adding this, we were able to still be better than what we were. And that gives, I think, the right thing to do. Keeps the littlest kids safe and how, you know, we're teenagers and older kids and adults would be in Virginia to here. And this would be divisible as well. There's in this corner to take you to the rest of the building. Back here we have some vending and some public restrooms. And all this is the administrative suite, all the offices. The offices for the rec center and the seniors are co-mingled, so right now you have two separate offices, but now we're able to find yet again more efficiency. So conference rooms, copiers, kitchenettes, bathrooms, all that stuff is going to be able to sort of, you don't have to build twice. And that was one of the ways we were able to save some square footage, which you'll hear from Greg is important because, as we all know, you just start doing the math in this building. It's going to grow. So as you go up towards the tennis court area, you have the game room and more activities like billiards, ping pong, video games, all that stuff being here. And then along the back side here, we have the multi-purpose room that I mentioned about that they've broken down into three different rooms that you have here. Each one's about 800 square feet, so a little bigger than the current lobby, each one. Imagine the lobby three times. Upstairs, I'm going to go right to the next, to the larger one, because this one is fairly easy to see. This whole level is about wellness and flexibility in the programming. The long list of the wishes and wants and desires that the Ballard King study had identified. Now we have everything in this sort of olive color. The ability to have whatever kind of programming you want. And what you see along here, here's that upper community living room that I spoke of, where the fireplace, again, the bathroom, so you have the bathroom stacked here, the elevator, not a lift on the stair. And that, we're imagining that when you walked in, that this area here would be open to above, so when you're upstairs, that's looking down into the lobby. And when you're standing here, you can look down to the lobby below, as well as looking down to the gym. And then we're imagining, this being the experience of a walking track in the building. And you'd be able to sort of kind of see the activity of the building instead of what you most often see are tracks that are internal and limited to doing inside of the gymnasium. We thought it would be interesting and more dynamic to have this walking element to kind of take you through the building and change the theme and kind of be able to look down and look through and look down into the pool and look out the windows and kind of come down and have a little bit more variety along the way. So areas that are sort of off that walking track are these kind of stretched cardio areas we kind of identified. So if you're here and you wanted to warm up, you have these abilities to sort of come up and pause if you needed to. We have multiple spaces for those. We have an internal opportunity for a room here, whether that could be yoga or some kind of other, the Red Cross could come in and do something, although that might be downstairs. Another multi-purpose room here as well. That's really an overview of kind of how the building is stacked and organized and more of the kind of parts that in the building and how they're related. We see this as a, for the most part, it's going to be essentially a two-plus story looking building from the outside. We put a lot of those two-story volumes, around the perimeter. So here is going to be a volume, here this is going to be a volume, and then here, we have a two-story building, but it's also it's going to fit within all those buildings. So essentially, we surrounded the two-story building with larger one-story buildings so that our building looks cohesive in the end. So that's the strategy that we have to date on this. And certainly, there's a lot more to do, like Matt had indicated. And of course, you're all curious to know what Greg has to say, so I'll bring Greg up to the podium next. Talk about construction preparedness.
Thanks, Jim. Jim, just a fun fact, Jim is a Hershey boy and grew up in that rec center. So before Greg starts, there are a lot of folks who just came in. There are at least a dozen seats up here. Please come in so you don't have to stand. There's also some seats in the front and on the side. So please come in and just climb over a few people so you can see a little bit better. Yeah, you can walk around the front too.
Again, we're 86,000 square feet, total program area, and the green areas represent renovation to the existing building. The other line items are related to new construction to get us up to that 86,000 square feet. I think the telling portion of this is that renovating the existing structure and adding new structure to equal the same program space as building all new is probably not a good alternative to look at, because the cost is higher than building an entirely new facility. And just conceptually, I think most people can relate to the fact that if you have a smaller structure that's roughly 32,000 square feet and you're trying to add 54,000 square feet around it and tie it all together, that there's some inherent inefficiencies in doing that and making that whole space function. So the third estimate that we put together was looking at the scenario of of renovating the existing facility only. So the existing facility is roughly 32,000 square feet, and so we looked at an estimate that would renovate that space and bring it up to what would be considered current codes and what would look like a new facility. It's a $11 million price tag to do that roughly. The cost per square foot is the highest between the three scenarios. There are, as Jim pointed out, or as Matt pointed out, many challenges with that existing building. Structurally, mechanically, programmatically, ADA issues. So it's an expensive building to renovate. The systems in the building are essentially, with the exception of maybe one or two pumps, completely at the end of their useful life, or well beyond their useful life. So that's a complete cut and retrofit. There are some structural issues, and it would be a significant renovation cost to do that. So those are the three scenarios. In terms of pricing, I want to point out that these are capital project costs only. As Matt said earlier, there's an operational cost analysis that's being done right now. These three scenarios do not take into account the operational cost analysis. They are capital project costs. There are construction costs as well as soft costs for each of these. So the intent is that these down totals are a grand total for the complete capital project cost. The last slide, very quickly, is schedule. I just want to talk about the overall process and the overall timeline that we're looking at for this project. The preliminary design is ongoing. As you can see, stakeholders meetings have been ongoing. The Board of Supervisors presentation, which is tonight. There's a number of other intermediary steps that need to happen before this project gets to the point where the Township and the Board of Supervisors need to make a decision as to whether or not this is a go, no go. In terms of construction, the plan at this point is for a spring of 2019 construction start. It's roughly a 14-month project if it is a new build-out, which would turn the building back over to the community in May of 2020. So between where we are today and February of 2019, as Matt had said, we're anticipating that there's a number of other points in time where the project team will come back, present information to the community, to the Board of Supervisors relative to cost, relative to schedule, and looking for opportunities for people to engage in providing feedback. That's all I have. I turn over to Lou Verdelli. Thanks, Greg. I'll be short, since, as you've heard, the construction is not scheduled to start for some time. So we really haven't formulated any specific financing plans. But what we wanted to do is just give you a general sense of how a project of this magnitude is financed among municipalities here in Pennsylvania. Typically, it's a combination of sources of funds. Usually, the issuer will go out and look for state grant funding or local grant funding. Typically, there's capital campaigns held among the stakeholders of the project and among the community. And then usually the last piece is sized with traditional financing, I mean bond financing or banknote financing. So those are the typical sources that would come together. Obviously, we need to know the scope of the project and project costs before it gets to my job of helping to put the final financing together. The other thing to keep in mind is what Greg just mentioned is really a project like this, when we think about the impact on the township's budget, there's really two pieces. It's the borrowing that's going to provide the money for the construction that's going to increase the debt service that the township has to pay. So that's the first piece of the impact. And as he mentioned, then the operating impact of the additional utilities and staff or the program that's being designed. So you really have two budget impacts. It's, again, obviously too early to pinpoint what they would be at this point in time, but we do have some construction cost estimates. And once we would get further along, we would then be looking at the township's existing debt. Right now, the township's final debt pays off in the year 2030. We've worked very hard to maintain the township's good credit rating, which is a AA from Standard & Poor's with a stable outlook. So as we design the financing, we would be mindful of trying to keep the budgetary impact somewhat in line with what's already in the budget, probably, you know, to accommodate this type of borrowing with what's in the budget for debt service right now, probably would be a pretty big hurdle. But those are the things that we would be working towards solving for once we actually have a project and a project cost, and that's how the financing would come together. So again, we haven't, there's no financing in place for the project. We obviously keep track of where interest rates are. We run some projections at today's interest rates and at future interest rates to see what that debt service impact might be. But again, it's really too early to finalize the details.
And then over here would be more you know, single depth kind of pool. And over here would be, I'm sorry, this would be the zero entry pool area here close to the family lockers. And then this would be the other, this sort of single depth. Outside, as I mentioned, this is really a line where the building, where the grade steps down. And what you have are an outdoor leisure pool, a toddler pool, if you will, with a zero entry along here, with the pool concessions and storage control point for summer months when people arrive. They would be sort of checked in here, so you have to go through the building. And then along this whole edge, you know, we're not proposing that you have what you currently have today, but you would have a series of openings that would be, if you look back at that wall, several of those openings, imagine that whole wall opening up to the outside. So we would have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of those openings to make that feel kind of like the way it does today, about having that flexibility to use the indoor leisure pool throughout the year, but in the summer, really combine all that water for leisure activity.
Thank you very much. It's a great explanation. And I was remiss in saying that I think it's difficult to overstate the amount of hard work and dedication that has been put into this by everyone. Matt, Zach, the Parks and Rec stakeholders, Ballard King, Kibble's Regret, and those members who have dedicated an incredible amount of time and effort on this. This is just a remarkable undertaking, a great deal, and it reflects in the work product here. I would say that my only other comments are that I think it's important that once we figure out the net operating cost to build, factoring in those outside resources, the net operating cost to operate this building, and how, as Mr. Verdelli said, that's going to impact not only our capital budget, but our general fund and our capital fund, once that information is obtained, that I do feel very strongly about the need for public input as we massage the features of this project, especially on a project of this magnitude, to the extent hopefully it would benefit from the use and enjoyment of so many of our residents. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ware. Mr. Ware.
Yes, I speak for all the supervisors. We're looking for direction here, and there's several things I think we have to consider. It's a great town to live in, we know that. We enjoy a lot of recreational things in this community free. This building we have was given to us by the Hershey Company. We used to have free police in 1974. We used to have free school buildings. Those days have passed, and now I think we have to consider if we want to maintain this standard of living, and I want to know how much people in town are willing to pay for it, what it's going to cost. I wish you all could take a tour, like I think all the supervisors did, walk through that building, see the leaky pipes, falling concrete, sagging floors, and we have to make a decision here. We have to do it soon. So, again, I commend all the members of the board, the stakeholders, for doing an excellent job for bringing the information I think we as a community need to make an informed decision.
Thank you. I think the only, in the essence of time, I simply would just reiterate some of the comments that my colleagues have made. It really is an important project. It's been a long time in coming. It's been a very long process. We've got a number of constituents and stakeholders that have been involved in this, and I tip my hat to my board colleagues who have helped organize the stakeholder committee and those key people involved in bringing this all together. It is a remarkable undertaking, and it is significant. So with that, I'll pass it off to Ms. Gordon.
I could talk about this for hours, but since it's quarter of, I just want to say thank you to everyone for coming tonight. Thanks especially to the stakeholders who've been working on this with such passion and heart for 3 years. We've got a long way to go, but there's definitely quite a testament to the support for this project just in the turnout in this room. look around. There's someone who's probably, what, 5 or 6 years old. We've got people 85 years old and everything in between. This is our community, and 2 years old in the back. That's what this center is for. It's for our entire community, and I know this is a lot to digest. If this is the first time you're seeing and hearing this, this is a lot to process. But I would argue that the people back in 1963 had the same kind of thing to work through. And it's something that did for the community then that lasted all these 53 years. And I think this is an important time in our community for us to make a decision, not just for us, but for the next generations for decades to come. So I just want to say thank you. And please stay with us. This is not, as Mark mentioned, this is not the last time that we're going to pull the public in. We want to make sure, just as the public's been a part of this process for 3 years, that you will continue to be a part of the process and that your feedback is taken into consideration. Because everything you see up on the screen here is because of feedback from the community. So to me, this is a very exciting project because it's been so collaborative, so thoughtful, and so strategic. One other quick point I wanted to mention, as we look at that operational analysis to look at the cost to operate, that also is going to include potential revenue from the facility. So we don't want to forget about that as we're looking at and what this is going to cost, not just to build, but to operate. But there is a plus side to this as well, potentially. So as we evaluate that moving forward, we'll have more information and a more clear picture, not just the snapshot today, but as we move forward, so that Audrey is up to date on that.
I just echo those comments. Thanks to everyone for coming tonight, and great job. The team has done a wonderful, remarkable job putting this together. But just to go one step further with that operational analysis, this is conceptual at this point, right? And it's our understanding, it's my understanding, that that operational analysis could change the direction of what we see on the screen right now. Correct? Okay. All right. So it's not set in stone. And with that, I'll end my comments and look forward to hearing from the public.
Okay, so here are the ground rules for the public. We've got 10 minutes. We do have a board meeting at 7. So what I'm going to ask, state your name, address, limit your comments to 2 minutes or less. And we're going to take a break at 7. We're going to need about 5 minutes to reconfigure the room, and then we will resume with our regularly scheduled board meeting. The mic is open.
Howard Naylor, 8 Cambridge Drive, Hershey. I have a question for Ward or anyone. What is our current population for the township?
25,000.
And what is the number of people that are served? Not on a, I come in 6 times a week, but how many people does the community center serve, or does it anticipate it to serve?
So last, in 2016, and I guess that goes back to your repeat visits, but we had 42,000 visits to the recreation center last year. Now, that does include some repeat visits, obviously. We have just over 3,000 members at the community center. One thing when I say that, you also have to look at, we have a small 6-lane pool and a quarter of a gymnasium, so right now, in terms of a draw and folks feeling as though there's a lot of opportunity there, certainly a facility like this, I would anticipate that the participation rates will go up exponentially just because of the broad range of opportunities available. So I hate to compare the current facility use to what it potentially could be in a new facility, but to answer your question, that's the numbers right now.
How many entities should we be expected to serve as the taxpayers? Everybody mentioned the entities, stakeholders. How many should we serve through this facility as opposed to the private gym, et cetera, et cetera?
I think the whole purpose of putting the team together was to serve as many stakeholders in our community as possible. We have gone through this process to very awarely not exclude anybody. So to answer your question, I think we have tried to put a program together. Once again, we're at the conceptual stage, but we're trying to put together a program that really can serve all stakeholders in the community. And that's why we drew everybody in, and that's why we're doing this here this evening, to, if there's segments that we're missing, that's, we need to hear from them. So we're here to serve everyone. We're trying to create a true community center.
Thank you. Next up, just go right up to the microphone. If you guys want to get one line up, if you will.
Anne Barnhart Mesa, resident 843 Chandler Drive, Hershey. I'm noticing this is mainly an aquatic center. I am currently in the pickleball player, and it is the fastest growing sport in America. They expect it to eventually be an Olympic sport. I'm not seeing anything to take care of us on this. The seniors on this chart, and sharing pickleball courts and basketball courts doesn't work really well. We play now, we have people waiting to play, we don't have enough courts. I'm not seeing an indoor court, I'm not seeing an outdoor court, and there is more than 60 people currently in the Hershey pickleball group, and it is a growing sport. It's in some of the high schools, it's in some of the colleges, and I think we're going to see a lot more people playing. So if you go to the Friendship Center, or you go to the Liquid Lids Recreation Center, they have lots of indoor pickleball courts. They just held a big pickleball tournament in Lidditz. I talked to a man down there. They have 4 indoor courts in one section, and they have 20 people at a time waiting to play. I'm not a swimmer. Would you like to play pickleball? Thank you.
Just very quickly, we have pickleball covered. we actually, as you know, we did line 2 outdoor tennis courts for pickleball. We're going to be lining another one at Gelder Park, just so you know. But we do fully anticipate to have multi-sport lines on these. So it would be a scheduling type of a situation, which we do now at the Recreation Center, and the pickleball club plays in our in our indoor gymnasium in the wintertime, and then uses both the indoor and outdoor during the summer. So we anticipate fully being able to accommodate the pickleball community.
I do appreciate that you did line off those 2 practice courts, but we've been over a couple times in the evening, and there's always teenagers playing basketball, which I encourage also. But, and I look over at 4 tennis courts, and most of the time they're empty. So it would be nice if we could have. It would be nice if I saw a separate outdoor basketball court for the kids too, which I don't see. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Neil, 820 Vermont Drive. I was wondering, as we start to talk about not only the cost of operation, but the cost of construction, are we going to be looking at the increase that this might have as far as cost of passes for the pool, and also the rising cost to become a member of the Mullins Senior Center? Has that been looked into at all?
In terms of the operations analysis that the board just approved at the last public meeting, we sent that firm our current fee structure in terms of memberships, our daily fee structures. They'll be working all of that into a scenario. Certainly, with the brand new facility, some of those costs are probably going to be escalated. Certainly, lane fees to utilize pools are going to be elevated as well. So in terms of the operations analysis, I'm hoping a lot of that, those types of questions will be answered in the operations analysis and give us a general sense of where some of those fee increases might be. But to answer your question very honestly, we wouldn't be able to keep the same fee structure that we're operating our current small facility in to operate that.
And also for the childcare, for the summer camp. I just want the public to be aware, because as we're asking the public, what they're willing to spend and pay. You know, I want the program and the public to know so that we can give that feedback.
Sure.
I would hate for our summer camps and such to be at a range where they can't afford it anymore.
Yep. No, that's a great point. And our child care program is viewed a little bit differently in terms of, as you know, we utilize the school district facilities for the before and after school program throughout the school year. We also use the school district's facility for a summer day camp. We hope that those relationships will continue, which assists us in keeping those costs down. So I don't anticipate nearly as drastic of drastic, but as significant of an increase in the child care area as maybe the membership would be.
For our seniors, too, I
think we're all very aware of that. And I can't speak for the senior center folks right now in terms of their fee structure or what it might be. But we do have tiered fee structures now, which resident, non-resident, and seniors obviously get a significant discount as well. So we would certainly keep that philosophy in place.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
I just wanted to say that this will be a big help to a special and if we have my police in a year. We have 46 people on our team. She's 6 lanes of the four. I don't really get my full, you know, endurance for swimming. We need to control that. We can always have our own endurance here to come faster and much brighter. And I've grown up in Hershey all my life. So the 504 is very good sport for me. Levi and you're welcome. I just appreciate the sports world they're going to make and accomplish more in turn towards session. Thank you.
Jack Bishop, 415 Lexington Court, Hershey. I'm the president of the Senior Center Board. We've been in negotiations, started with the supervisors. We will be an independent piece within this building. We will set our own fees. We have no intention of raising them. Unlike the school district and the township, we can apply for grants. We're a nonprofit organization. One of our board members has started to write the grants. And we will be applying for construction money, which these other organizations cannot. Thank you.
Ferguson, 1338 Corral Hollow Road. First of all, I just want to say I support Stacey's comments as to why she would like to see him. Swimming facility. But I just want to point out, I love it, Ross and KS, but I like the design. The only thing I would like to point out is currently right now the facility has a 50-meter pool. And this design does not have a 50-meter pool. You did talk about the option of putting a 50-meter pool in it. And I think the competitive team would be losing very important tool in training if you didn't have a 50-meter pool. Summer swimming is all 50 meters. The Olympics is 50 meters. And to have a nationally recognized swimming program here in Hershey, to take that training tool away from them would be pretty detrimental because there would be nowhere for them to practice the summer when they're looking for a 50-meter pool. Just wanted to thank you.
Matt, do you want to mention, how the operational analysis or take that into account and looks at that as something?
Sure. Really following the same format that we've been talking about this entire time, there's basically the base design, which is what we're looking at here. So the operations analysis will take this into consideration, this design right here. They're also going to be evaluating this design with the 50-meter pool. What does that mean in terms of expenditures? What does that mean in terms of potential revenue generation? And also, in addition to that, they're going to be looking at a more robust fitness component. And what does that mean in terms of expenditures? And what does that mean in terms of revenue generation as well? So it's really a three-tier kind of study. So it's the base design, this design with a 50-meter, and this design with a more robust fitness component. So they're the three kind of menu data that we should be seeing here at the end of July or beginning of August when that report is completed.
Thanks.
Thanks, Matt. We are going to keep the microphone open for another 8 or 10 minutes, so if you'd like to, there's a lot of people here, so we don't want to miss them. If you'd like to make comments, please step to the microphone. We'll try and keep it as open as we can and then cut it off at some point.
Richard Gamble, 39 Harper Brokers, Pennsylvania. I think it's a great idea. I think the concept, the need to be the majority of people. But one of my concerns I have, and Matt's brought up, the membership. Out of 25,000, we have 3,000 members. That's 12%. I think that in order to fund and membership keep the cost down, it's going to depend on the people that live here. And I would recommend seriously run a survey and see how many people would be really interested in backing and supporting this program, showing the benefit they would see. And, you know, what would be the reason they would or would not support the more forward this project? But I think that number 12%, you know, really doesn't do benefit to the majority of the community at this point. There's a reason that, as Matt brought up, possibly the size, availability of activities, but then we're bringing in other, you know, like the Skidmore Center. Okay, that's an entity in their own, but it's space, it's not a program that's going to benefit the majority. They already have a place they got to get out, I understand. But working together directly would give us better direction of which way we should be going. And do we want what's in this plan? You know, get this printed out, get it out there, let people take a look. Do we need a community room with a fireplace? And that's all money. You know, I can sit in my room and look at my fireplace. Whole concept of what the community is for, are going to benefit from.
Yeah. Mr. Campbell, that's a great question. And just as a point to kind of clarify, I think if you just focus on the number of current members, that really doesn't tell you the full story. I'm not a member of Start Matt, but I do go there frequently, and I'm sure many of you do as well. And I think, you know, to look and compare what we might have with another center and what membership and what attendance might grow to would be a different story. And I would also offer that, for example, with the library, I don't want to ask you to raise your hands to see if you go to the library or not, but that's part of our community. And as stewards of our community and as citizens of our community, it's our responsibility to make sure that we have these kind of amenities and services for everyone, whether you use them or not. So if you don't use the rec center, you don't use the library, maybe you pay school taxes and you don't send your kids to school, but it's all part of our responsibility as being citizens of this fantastic township. So just kind of keep that in mind. You may not use it now, maybe you use it later, but it's our responsibility to provide this for everybody in our community.
I strongly encourage that we get some type of a survey out there and get the feeling of the majority of the population, taxpayers, what they would like to see. I mean, that's a big, big number. And like I say, what we have presently, 12%, can we generate that to maybe 30% or even 40%? But what's there now, I think, is a reasonable cost of memberships. But again, we're only getting 3,000 members. So I think that's something we need to take a look at. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Campbell.
Jack Storm, how do you name? Aaron Hershey. Just a comment, I think it was brought up twice about the 3,000 members. We're bringing in the Boulder Center. That's another 700, I believe. So that just helps your 12% figure a little bit and bolsters it up to that group that's in there, again, for the whole community center. I think one of the things that's going to be very strategic in this whole thing is who in this area, who on the board, who in this township is smart enough to figure out how to fund the whole thing. How do we get the dollars? What kind of things are available for this community? And I think Susan said a great thing, that we're going to generate income out of this too. If the people that are running these places are smart enough, this thing could, should work. But it's going to take a lot of work. And it's not just going to take 5 people up there. It's going to take a lot of people in this audience and a lot of people that aren't here tonight to help in this whole thing. I think it can be done for a smart community.
On Jack's note, I
wholeheartedly endorse what you're saying. And if anybody out there has great ideas on how we can fund this, let us know. Okay? I mean, we don't have a monopoly on all that. So
no, I would ask that if you're interested and passionate in this, as I know you all are because you're here, let's do this in an organized, strategic fashion. We've already talked about how we might put together a capital campaign for community to participate in, you know, what kind of grants might we be able to look at. You know, we have to look at this as a whole, and then we can kind of divide and conquer. So as much as you might want to go out and start raising money tonight, just relax for a little bit. If you're interested, Matt, should people follow with you that they want to participate? Anyway,
or would Laura be a good person to touch base with as well, from a community development standpoint?
Either that or through Matt, and then we have not yet gotten to the point, obviously, where we're raising money because we're not at that point in the project, but certainly if this is something that you're interested in being a part of, you know, we could use boots on the ground for sure. So maybe now either let Matt or Lauren or certainly one of us know, we'll make sure that we push you to work.
I'm just talking about ideas.
Yeah.
You know, like I had a great conversation with somebody today that even suggested possibly naming rights.
Well, that would be all part of the strategy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those are the types of outside-the-box thinking that encourage people with good ideas to come up with. Let us know. Ladies and gentlemen, in the essence of time, what I would like to see, so that you can share with the board, I'm going to ask for a show of hands of those who are in favor of this and those who are opposed. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but obviously we won't get to hear from each and every one of you. So those that would be in favor of this, if you'd please raise your hand. Thank you very much. Those who would be opposed, and again, this is at this juncture. It's very early on. Very good.
Really lovely letters of support. If you have questions, if you have comments you want to share with the board, please feel free to share that with the board or with Matt, and we'll make sure we take all that into consideration.
Very good. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to conclude this public meeting, and we're going to adjourn, and I'm going to ask in 5 minutes if we can reconvene for the regularly scheduled